TELC, English C2, Mock Examination 1. Listening and summarizing. You will now hear a talk. You will hear it once. You have been asked to write a structured summary of what you hear for someone who cannot attend. Make notes on the paper provided while listening to the talk. After the recording has been played, use your notes to write a concise summary of the talk on answer sheet S30. You should include the 5 main points and 2 sub-points for each. Write a coherent text using full sentences. The notes you make here will also be needed for the sub-test writing.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It gives me great pleasure to welcome you to today's lecture on artificial intelligence, the second in our interdisciplinary series entitled The Anatomy of the Mind, which explores different approaches to understanding intelligence. The university is honored that our guest speaker this afternoon, Professor Harris, has agreed to speak about how artificial intelligence fits into the wider philosophical debate about what it means to be human. Please join me in welcoming Professor Harris.
Thank you, Professor White. It's a great pleasure for me to be here today. As you know, I'll be discussing artificial intelligence, or AI. There's a lot of ground to cover, and the research is extensive. So I'll be focusing on a few key questions. To begin with, I'll speak about the activity many thinkers have claimed is distinctively human, namely the ability to speak and communicate using language. To what extent are computers able to process and generate human language? I will then turn to ludic behavior, something we humans share with much of the animal world, that is, engaging in games and play. Computers may be able to outperform humans on certain tasks, but to what extent are machines able to learn while engaged in play as we do? Anyone who has observed a child at play will know that humans can enjoy almost limitless creativity. In the third part of my talk, I will address the extent to which machines can be considered creative or to have the power of imagination. From there, I will move on to discussing what role emotions might play in artificial intelligence. And finally, end by tackling the question of what might stand in the way of assembling artificial counterparts of ourselves. So, let's start by looking at artificial speech. The big question here is, I suppose, will machines ever be able to hold a conversation like humans do? To speak and respond to a human being just like another human being does? Research that has been carried out in the field of voice recognition has shed some interesting light on this question. The technology has been immensely helpful to the visually impaired, who can dictate into a microphone, secure in the knowledge that their words will be understood and inserted into a document. The software can also read a written text aloud. Similarly, many computers and mobile devices nowadays can understand and carry out instructions. Now, I've just used the verbs understand and read to describe what the machine has done. But these words are perhaps misleading. The computer recognizes sounds and speech patterns by comparing them to items stored in its memory, and then performs an action based on stored instructions. It only works with clear speech and doesn't react well to strong accents or dialects. The machine has no need to understand the meaning of the words themselves, merely to find them in its rulebook. This is a far cry from understanding as we know it. Where does this leave spontaneity and originality? To develop true AI, the machine would need to be able to generate original speech or ideas, independent of any previous stimulus or specific programming. This has tremendous implications and would be a huge leap forward, one that the experts are still working on. Any AI machine that could do this, and this leads me to the last point I wanted to mention with regard to artificial speech, would have to pass the famous Turing test, named after the British mathematician Alan Turing. Put at its simplest, the Turing test is a test in which an observer would communicate with a human and a machine without knowing which was which, and would not be able to distinguish the machine's ability to show intelligent behavior from that of the human. So far, this has remained elusive, but for how long? So let's move on to the second issue, ludic behavior, which is to say, behavior characterized by play. Can machines play games and learn from the experience as we do? We know that tasks involving calculations or performing actions repeatedly are going to get done much faster and more efficiently by a computer. Machines neither tire nor make errors due to fatigue. Of course, people do. But there is an advantage to making mistakes, and that is that we can learn from them. So far, we've been better than computers at this, but they are catching up on us. Computer programs nowadays are often heuristic. This means that they try various solutions and can modify themselves according to what gives them the best results. Games are a good example of this. We've seen how computer programs have evolved to play better and better chess. Perhaps it's wrong to talk of them playing chess, because what the computer does is to respond to a situation and predict possible outcomes, choosing the optimum outcome for what we think of as its move. Because the computer can compute so much faster and more efficiently than a human brain, it can see further ahead. That is, look at more possible permutations of moves than a human mind can handle. But there are still limitations to what computers can do. We'll be looking in more detail at some of these in a moment. But while we're talking about games, consider the Oriental game Go. More complex than chess, it has hundreds of pieces and places to play them. The pieces don't move around the board, but accumulate during the game and can be removed in certain circumstances. Instinct and strategy define top players. And so far, no computer has come close to beating the best of them. This is not to say that one day it won't happen. This brings me to my third point. Can computers ever become truly creative? I think what we're getting at here is, can computers go beyond the way they are programmed? Can they break free of the rules that govern their behavior to be able to create something new and meaningful out of nothing? We seem to be straying into the worlds of, well, science fiction. In one sense, computers as we know them are limited by the programs that are written for them and by the need for a reliable and uninterrupted power source to keep them working. But today, computers can look for their own sources of power. And many computer programs today are themselves written, in whole or in part, by other computers, with no one human being actually understanding how the whole program works. Put the two together: self-charging machines that design their own heuristic software. And you have to wonder where it will lead. If computers are able to reproduce other machines in their own image, then perhaps at the end of the day, the real question may be a theological one. Is it only the belief in, or the construct of, the soul that truly distinguishes mankind from machines? Clearly, this is beyond the scope of today's talk, but now that I've mentioned the soul, this is probably the best point at which to move on to the next topic I wanted to cover. Can computers ever be programmed to have or develop human emotions? We feel, rightly or wrongly, that there's something humans possess, something somehow separate from our physical selves, where these emotions reside. Of course, we may be wrong, and these feelings may just be the result of electrochemical impulses firing off in our brains. But our emotions are essential for our social interaction with others. Without them, we are unfit for purpose. The question for computers, robots, androids, or whatever else is coming along, will be whether they can progress from behaviorist stimulus and response to having genuine feelings of their own. I tend to doubt it. As I see it, if machines need to interact with us or each other, then they will do so more efficiently by being rational and predictable. It would not be in their or our interest for them to become moody and capricious. For the last part of my talk, I would like to share some rather more speculative ideas. Consider, for example, the possibility of creating artificial versions of ourselves, perhaps even clones of ourselves, using our own DNA in some futuristic fusion of flesh, silicon, and steel. Well, I can't see far enough into the future to know whether there will ever be machines, let's call them androids, that will be able to live and communicate like us. But I can see some obvious difficulties. Humans are wholly organic, and to survive, they need to eat, sleep, and reproduce. All of these functions are problematic with androids. The first may have analogies in practice, but the last is, at present, if you'll pardon the pun, inconceivable. Perhaps a bigger problem is the question of free will. We have the ability, or so we like to believe, to make choices, often life-determining choices. It's hard to see that power delegated to a machine. In short, without freedom of choice, or some degree of free will, it is equally hard to see machines ever functioning in a way indistinguishable from humans. So I'd like to end here, as I'm sure that some of you will have some questions, and I'd be very happy to take questions from the floor.
You now have 45 minutes in which to write your summary. Write the summary on pages 3 to 6 of the answer sheet. You now have 10 minutes. You now have 5 minutes. End of the subtest, listening and summarizing. Please hand in pages 1 to 6 of the answer sheet. Leave the texts of the subtest reading and your notes on the talk on the table. You will need these later for the subtest writing. There will now be a break of 20 minutes, for which you must leave the examination room.